Welcome to World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN. I'm David Dye. For a band with roots in the punk rock scene, my guess they might be giants of extraordinary commercial appeal. John Flansburg and John Linnell, also known as the Two Johns, have been constructing clever songs since the early 1980s. The giants have scored hits like Istanbul, Not Constantinople, and Birdhouse in Your Soul, and written music for television. Recently, they've added a new generation of fans, branching out into children's music. The Two Johns have just released their 13th studio album called The Els. Let's start our World Cafe session with a live performance of the Mesopotamians.
We've been driving around from one end of this town to the other and back, but no one's ever seen us driving on a Canadian van, and no one's ever heard of our band. We're the Mesopotamians. Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, scratch it all down into the clay. I believe in there will sometime come a day someone gives a damn. Maybe when the concrete has crumbled to sand, where the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal.
That's music from The Els, which is the new album from They Might Be Giants, and it seems like ages since John Linnell and John Flansburg and company have joined us on the cafe. It hasn't been that long, but a lot has been going on in their lives, and including this new album. Welcome. Good to see you all.
Thanks. Thanks. Great to be back.
And do you feel like now you're recapturing your career as a non-children's act?
Well, this was definitely an adult record. I mean, I think we never made an adult record, you know, on the heels of a lot of children's stuff before. So it very much defined the fact that we in the past we've done stuff that was just the stuff we do. And
right.
Now suddenly, all of a sudden, this is like distinct from kids' music. But I mean, and you know, it's essentially just a They Might Be Giants album.
And it's a fabulous sounding one. And I don't know where credit goes to the Dust Brothers or to
we try and grab all the credit that we can.
Yeah. The good sound was our idea.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting when you look at your career, because you guys have been here. We've talked about almost everything you've done. We've talked about the songs on The Answering Machine. Of course, you had the movie. You've kind of, I want to know what's next, because you've guys done whatever is next before.
And hair care.
Well, I hope it's not ringtones. That's
yeah.
I mean, not that we haven't done ringtones, but
right.
It seems like in the music industry today, the stock answer is ringtones will save the day.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But you've managed yeah. To spread your career out in a way that whatever you guys do as a band, as a five-piece band going out touring or whatever, supporting yourself, you've got all these other things that you can kind of support yourself.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a little bit confusing. I think when we started doing kid stuff, we kind of recognized that we would be kind of having a parallel career. The television stuff that we do, even though it gets a lot of notice, it doesn't really seem to cross into people's like live perception of the band. I mean, we did the theme for The Daily Show and the thing for Malcolm in the Middle, and we still like rarely do those songs in the show. So, and nobody's like going like, what's up with that? You know, it's like, I guess those are essentially more faceless things culturally.
Well, I am probably the last person in the world. I didn't realize that was your song on The Daily Show. But when I hear Mesopotamia from the new album, I think, that sounds like a bid to get on The Daily Show, because they have the
The
Mesopotamia. Right.
Yeah. No, we actually we did like a whole elaborate sound package that they've been using for. We've done multiple packages for them, not just the rock theme at the beginning, which was actually written by Bob Mould from Husker Du. But all the orchestral stuff and all the
walk-on music.
Yeah.
When the guests show up, that's us playing them on.
And the at the very end of the show, there's always this big trombone moment, and that's our trombone player, Dan Levine, we're basically just like vamping on the theme, and he was just, you know, blowing his brains out. And it's always really, you know, fun watching the show and see, you know, I always think of Dan. having his spotlight moment.
And not having to be there while the music plays, too, every night.
Yeah.
There are those who get to.
It's a great thing about doing TV stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. You're at home.
Those long envelopes.
The new album is the, exactly, is the Else, and what's next from the new one?
Well, this is another track from the Else that we're going to play live, and this is called Upside Down. I've got to get my key here. Okay.
You say you've got some very excellent news. You say I'm going to die when you tell me. And in my way I will. But though your words will kill, I know you'll think that I don't seem to care. It's just because my frown is upside down. It's upside down. My frown is upside down.
More from the Else, as they might be giants are playing live for us today. And there was an interesting discourse about they might be giants about this album on Pitchfork, which I was interested in, because they kind of said that they see you as coming out of punk, that you were originally a punk band,
uh-huh.
And they want you to embrace that heritage.
Embrace
I was wondering how you felt about that.
Well, I think that, you know, we had a really weird experience when we were starting out, which was we came to New York in 1981, and there was a cloud of punk dust where punk had just left. Yeah,
we
arrived,
we were looking for the punk, but the punk had left the building.
Yeah.
It was literally like the month we got there, I think many of the venerable sort of outlets for the punk rock music.
Yeah, we got a booking at the Mud Club, and we got booked, and then the Mud Club closed right before the date that we were supposed to perform there. So it was really like the whole shop had folded up.
Now, John, you and John had, before you descended into the punk dust, had you guys written together and worked together before you got to the city, or how did that work?
Actually, we did do some goofing around. Neither one of us was like completely focused on songwriting, or, I mean, we liked tape recording, I guess, in the beginning. So we did some stuff in Boston together that was just like, you know, really just doing recordings, not thinking so much of songs as just trying to have fun making recordings. And then when we got to New York, I think by that time we'd been playing in other bands, and we both started experimenting with songwriting and thinking more in terms of songwriting. So that was sort of when we started, more or less, was 1981, I guess, when we got to New York City.
It's interesting that you mentioned sound, because all the recordings have, they're very interesting ways to approach recording and sound, and that was always been an interest from way back.
Yeah, I think in many ways we're obsessed with sound, to be perfectly honest. And
sound.
And you know, I mean, which is a good thing for a musician to be interested in, although it's certainly not the only thing. But I guess, you know, if we were a more traditional band, getting back to the punk dust, you know, there would be ways to kind of signify some, you know, sort of codified idea of the band. And that might be really critically satisfying. And it might even be really satisfying for our audiences, but I think for us, it would really kind of be the end of it. I mean, I think essentially there's something, you know, at the core of what we're doing is essentially it's experimental for us. And there's a huge amount of casting about going on. And it's not always, you know, successful, but it really wouldn't be successful if it wasn't unpredictable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
does this kind of experimentation?
That's what I have to say to the punk people.
I love that. In terms of this experimental nature of the band, does that kind of, I'm wondering if it puts a distance between the emotions of your songs? Because I listen to songs on this, and there's some things that are.
Oh, we shut out the emotion completely.
I know you're being ironic, but there is a distance, definitely, in what you
No,
did.
No. I mean, I'm not. I mean, we're not first person singular songwriters in the. And if we are, we would probably. I mean, when we have been, it's been coded enough to give us like personal cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, there's definitely different schools of songwriting, and I think a lot of our songs are dealing with sort of an unreliable narrator concept. So they appear to be first person singular, but actually the person talking is not really representing us. And
we don't find ourselves really that compelling as people. And so we're not really writing from the perspective of our personal biographies. I think that would be a kind of a bad fate for us. If we were forced to write songs about our own lives, we would probably give up songwriting.
Yeah.
They might be giants or I guess. Now, okay, 12th album.
That difficult 12th album.
Well, you do that, and you do everything else you do. When you set up a set list for a show, are there songs that have to be in every show, or are there songs?
Well, I think if you ask somebody in the front row, they would definitely say yes. But, if you asked the sound man, they would inform you that it would be no. Yeah, we do a pretty long show, so we and our songs are really short, so we can pull out a lot of like older songs and try to keep it sort of zesty for everybody, including ourselves. I'm just thinking about, just the way we're presenting ourselves as a band. And there is this aspect of like, the way bands say like, oh, we just do our own thing and we don't care what people think or what audiences think. I think the sort of the contrary motion about like the band that we're in that actually is a really active part of our situation is that we actually really care about the entertainment value of our show and really care about the theater of our show in a way that is almost, I mean, it's the really the only, I mean, that and like Supreme Court justices are like the only topics on our tour. Like we're always talking about how to improve the show in this very ongoing way. And when people say like, oh God, you guys have been a band for like 25 years, and it's like, we have been, kind of obsessed with this band for 25 years, and it's made it go, the 25 years go by very, very quickly and very, cheerfully. Because
I think you're selling the tour bus short, though, John.
Besides the Supreme Court, well, there's the debates about IQ testing.
There's how much you should tip.
We had a whole day discussing how much you should tip, like, in every situation. Right. Delivery people, this came from the guys in the band. Evidently, if a delivery guy comes to your door with anywhere between $30 to $100 worth of delivery food, you should tip him $5, which is enough to, like, as a gratuity, but you don't need to tip on the actual, like he's a waiter.
On the amount. But that was controversial, as I recall.
Right.
These are all ongoing debates in the band, and we'd be spending the entire hour with you talking about it.
But on that topic, since it is a new year, it's 2008, I do want to pull out this is known as the list. This is Marty Beller's, our drummer's list of words that he would like there to be a
moratorium,
a UN cultural boycott of. And so feel free to discuss at home as we read down the list. These are expressions that should no longer be said. 100%. No worries, all good, old school, too much information, phone tag, jumping the shark, talk to the hand, don't go there, my bad, this is the way we roll, word, impactful, issue, and the final one is needless abbreviations.
I think we can get an amen on almost all those.
All right.
So,
it's got to start somewhere. I think it should start in the World Cafe.
Well,
1,000%. Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't 110%.
You said 100.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, I thought it was 110%.
I think any of those.
Any of those.
Except for 100%. 100% is acceptable.
When are those sports guys going to actually start saying stuff that means something?
Right. Well, the place I was going with this brief discussion was that whenever you guys come here,
David, we're out of time.
That whenever you guys come here, you're kind of concentrating on whatever the new thing is. But maybe you could throw in something old.
Oh, it'd be our pleasure.
Absolutely. Shall we play a song from the past called Dr. Worm?
We shall.
Okay.
That's They Might Be Giants with a tune from the past called Dr. Worm. The duo's new album is called The Else. It's on the Idlewood label. I'm David Dye. World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN is produced at WXPN in Philadelphia and XPN.org. To hear my complete conversation with the Might Be Giants along with full performances, visit worldcafe.npr.org. And thanks for joining me.